Hello and welcome to Metaphysical Straight Talk from the Heart. I'm Atira, your host. Today's show, I am so pleased to interview Agnes Thomas. And she is native of Cleveland, Ohio. She obtained her PhD in psychology at Case Western Reserve University. And she worked as a counselor for the mentally handicapped and brain-damaged children and adults. She has a 25-year experience in non-invasive work with animals at Case Western Reserve University School of Medicine. Agnes is recognized internationally for her work with brain development, development of respiratory control system, and sleep and breathing. She has been communicating with animals since 1992. She is an author of a new book out, Pets Tell the Truth, A Metaphysical Journey into the Animal Mind, as well as a wonderful CD on pets as fellow human beings. Agnes, welcome to my show.
Oh, thank you, Atira.
I'm so pleased you're here. I think that's an incredible leap from a very psychological background, a PhD, and human brains, which I believe is the receiver for psychic information, to animals, to communicating with animals. How wonderful.
It really isn't, if you think about it, because it's all mind.
True.
And I'm interested in the mind, and I studied it in college and learned to be a psychologist. And then because my specialty was brain damage, I learned how different minds can operate based on their how the wiring is, what the damage is, and how different they are from other people. I also noticed that people had extraordinary minds that went beyond the usual senses of taste and hearing and smell, and I wondered about that, how that was possible. And so it led me into sort of a study of metaphysics.
I think it's fascinating because I really don't think scientists have figured out how thoughts are formed. I mean, we understand that the brain receives the thoughts and that, but we don't really, we understand if a part of the brain's damaged, it affects how one can process thinking. But I'm not sure anyone really knows how thoughts are formed.
No, there is no way to know that. The reason we think that the brain is the manufacturer of thought is because people that have brain damaged have deficits in their ability to communicate. But there is much research out in the last 20 years to indicate that the mind is not in the brain. It's outside the brain, and especially the work of Valerie Hunt, who found a way to measure the aura. The aura is actually the spirit, and it surrounds the body in every direction, and it's wider on some people than it is on others. But she did something I did in the laboratory, and what she did was she hired 20 people who could read auras, see them, and she could not see them. But and one of these people was Barbara Brennan, and she would take an electrode, and when everybody agreed, yes, this color of aura is green, or this lady has an aura and it's yellow, she would manipulate her electrode, her needle, into that area, and then she could record a signal from what was called the human energy field. And when she did, she found that different colors in the aura respond to different frequencies. For example, she found that if a person is thinking about the physical dimension, like what are they going to eat for lunch or what do they have to do at work today, she found that their aura vibrates at a frequency of about 250 cycles a second, which is the same as skeletal muscle. As soon as they think about something more esoteric, like something they love or someone they love or God, their vibrational field gets much higher. It goes to about 400 cycles a second. She found that there is a gap between 400 and 800, and she doesn't know why, but that mystics and psychics that act as mediums operate in a very narrow range. Their aura vibrates at 800 to 900 cycles a second, and that makes them receivers of special information from the universe. That's how they can do it, and this can be measured. Now, the entity that they're channeling may vibrate at a much higher energy, but for the medium, it operates within that field. She found that people that what she calls mystical personalities can vibrate up to 15,000 cycles a second. And she found that the auras of people who were what she called healers, like mystical healers, like, say, Maria.
Barbara Brennan, are you talking about Barbara Brennan? She wrote the book, The Hands of Light?
Yes.
Yeah,
she was one of the subjects
book.
In her
yeah.
study.
You're right. It's a fabulous book if you're listening out there. It's one really to check out, and it talks
oh, yeah.
about the human energy field. Fascinating. So go on. She found out
so
that...
So she found that people who have healing powers,
mm-hmm.
Like saints or, say, Padre Pia,
their
aura or their energy field operates at a frequency of 200,000 cycles a second. And this is very consistent with religious systems that they believe that the more evolved you are, the higher your vibrations. And it's the vibrations which Valerie Hunt says we have around our energy field, and that we have a transaction between our energy field and the energy of someone else. And she found that the energy field of a person that is ill can be greatly influenced by us if your energy field is high. It can bring it up to your level.
Well, I think as spiritual people and as metaphysical people, that certainly has been documented out many, many times, not scientifically so much, but if you look at Henry Edwards' work, he's a famous English healer, but
mm-hmm.
Edgar Cayce, many, many of these phenomena have been going on from forever, and it's exciting to hear that they're now able to really document it with information and vibrations and things that can be measured by science. It's a fascinating leap for us.
Oh, yes, because it takes it out of the supernatural to the natural.
Yeah.
And
wonderful.
Animals do the same thing. I've discovered just recently that
animals
have auras.
Animals also vibrate at a different frequency.
They're higher than us. They actually exist on a higher spiritual level.
Yeah, because they also really respond to sounds at a higher level even. They're more
yes.
sensitive.
Yes.
That's the dog whistle, yes.
Yes.
So how did you go from, I know this work that you're talking about today is even another step in your work, but even going from the study of the mind, the human mind, to communicating with animals in 1992, really, for most people, they think about Animal Planet and the animal communicator
uh-huh.
that was on there, that it's like a fairly new phenomenon. But I think it's been around forever. I can remember an uncle that was very much like the horse whisperer. So I think it's been around a long time.
Yes, I have a friend that got the skill when she was very young, too. She was actually born with it. I did not have the skill. I'm not a psychic. But telepathy is different than having a psychic ability.
Mm.
Telepathy is thought transfer. And for me, it is a learned phenomenon. And I got into it because my husband just passed away. And then I had, it was within 3 months, I lost one cat. And I had another cat, Frosty, who developed a brain tumor. And I was very distressed because I didn't think I could bear another loss, especially my little Frosty.
Well, I think that's true. In James Van Praagh's book, Healing Grief, he talks about all kinds of loss. And I think people get focused on, if we lose a human loved one. But for many, many people, our animals are just part of the family. It's devastating.
They are.
And to lose an animal on top of the loss of a husband is, like you said, almost more than you can stand.
It was more than I could stand.
Yeah.
One day, as Frosty was in the hospital, they removed his tumor, and he did fine. He had a tumor pressing on the optic nerve and caused him to be blind. And then about 5 months later, he grew another tumor. Well, we didn't know what was wrong with him, but he lost his sight again. And I was waiting for him, for the hospital to open so I could take him home, because they had said that they had done everything for him. And I came across, I was always early, I'm very early, and I don't like people waiting for me. And I went into a McDonald's restaurant, and I happened to see a copy of the Cleveland Plain Dealer, and there was an article in there by Suzanne Hively. She writes a column about animals. And she wrote about this woman in New York who could talk to animals, and she could do this over the phone. Well, when I got Frosty home, he had lost consciousness, and I was really distraught. So I picked up the phone, and I called her. And honestly, Atira, I thought, you know, I'm going to be struck by lightning because I shouldn't be doing this.
I know. I know what you mean.
But he said something to me that really, really blew me away. I asked him how he was, how he was feeling, and he said that he's doing okay. He's feeling sick, but he's doing okay. And he said that I asked him if he was scared in the hospital, and he said, no, Daddy was with me the whole time, meaning my husband. Okay, now my husband's in spirit form. And then he said, I asked him, you know, are you going to get well, Frosty? And he said, I'm not concerned with my physical life. I'm concerned with my spiritual one.
Oh.
The spiritual life. It blew me away because this is, you know, I worked with animals in the laboratory 25 years, but I never dreamed that they had a spiritual life or that they had missions. Oh, so what I did is I traveled around the country and I studied with people that know how to do this and they taught me. And it's really a learned skill.
Well, I want to say this. I think that's wonderful to say that it can be learned because I think sometimes people think you have to be psychic, it has to be this way. And I come from being psychic since childhood and being aware. So I'm lucky in that way. I don't know any different. But I also teach that, you know, I think everybody can learn a certain level of it and become very good at all of the levels of clairvoyance as well as this is telepathy. And it's wonderful to know that you can teach it. And that is a big part of your work, is it not?
Yes.
Teaching it.
I actually learned how to do this in one day.
Fabulous.
And I teach it in workshops in one day. There are about 150 to 100 authentic animal communicators in the country. Most of us learned from Penelope Smith, who was the leader of the animal communication movement. But we all learned it. That's the key word. We learned it.
Well, I want to say this, though, too, as a key word, and that is that learning something, you can take things in one-day workshops, but you have to practice.
Oh, yes.
First of all,
you have to go into an altered state to do this.
Right, and you have to continue to practice.
Yes, and you need to have a bona fide way that you can validate that what you're getting is accurate. And I have a wonderful scientific reputation, and I have many, many publications, and I would not risk that on something that I couldn't prove. So
well,
when
because
I
you come from the scientific background, too.
Oh, I didn't want to ruin my reputation. I mean,
absolutely.
So what I did was when I would talk to an animal, I would call one of my friends, and I would ask if their dog would talk to me, and the dog said yes. And I'd ask him to show me in pictures what he was seeing out the window. And he would show me that there's a group of kids playing baseball. And then I would take a pen and paper, and I would write down what I was seeing. And then I would drive to the house to see if what I wrote down was accurate. I was surprised, Atira, how accurate it was.
I think animals are very visual and very sensory.
Yes.
I think they're phenomenal. So give me an example of an animal's mission. I love that sound because I believe we all have a mission.
Yes, but they're sort of intertwined with ours. First of all, animals are part of our energy. And they've been with us in every lifetime in one form or another. Their mission, their general mission for all of us is they help humans on their spiritual journey. And what I have found most, at least the people that call me as clients and I ask the animal what their mission is, it's to help them to decide a career opportunity that would be more beneficial to mankind. And I think people have a lot of love in their hearts for others. And I think getting bogged down in a profession that seems to be detached,
right,
can work hardship on you. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the people that call me and that animals want to help encourage are people that are in the health professions, are in the healing business, all kinds of healing. I don't care if it's psychic healing or whatever it is,
nurses,
laying
doctors,
of hands.
Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I find it fascinating. I do think animals have such a mission in the world. I mean, they've proven now taking animals into hospitals, even having, now I noticed a couple nursing homes in my area actually have cats, live in cats, because they found out that people do better because they've had to leave their home and leave their animals behind, and they're distraught for
a
long time.
They really, and in my book, I talk about the healing power of animals, and there are several ways they do that. First of all, their energy is very, very high, and they can go to a spot on your back that hurts, and they can sort of smooth out your energy field and bring healing energy to you. A second way is that they have measured in hospitals and nursing homes the physiological responses of human subjects when they come in contact with animals. Just the presence and having a dog or a cat sit on their lap really improves their physiological functioning.
I know someone did a test on people holding cats and dogs and petting them,
mm-hmm.
actually lowering blood pressure. I remember that. Fabulously interesting to me.
Oh, very interesting.
The other thing is I actually had a friend who had a little, like, almost like a chihuahua, and it started this habit of, like, going and scratching, like, on her chest, and she thought it was very strange, and he actually was scratching where she developed cancer.
Oh, yeah.
Went on for, like, about three
months.
You
know what he was trying to do?
Yeah,
he
was trying to heal it.
To scrape away whatever was blocking her heart chakra.
Right. It's amazing.
So that the
story.
Energy could flow more normally. And yes, he went right to the cancer spot.
And I believe he really saved her life because she probably wouldn't have had it checked. I mean, she noticed that spot because the animal.
Very interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting. So it's like, so now you're studying, I understand, the auric field and the animals. That sounds fascinating.
There has been computer software around for at least 10 years that I know of that can photograph auras in humans. And there are ways that I'm not familiar with yet that they quantify it, except by color. You can get your aura taken, and you can see that parts of it are white. The white is apparently the highest color you can get, and it means connection with spirit. Also, there's darker colors like red, which means that you are grounded at the same time you're spiritual. Some of the lighter blues and the violets are healing colors. And recently, a person who worked on this software, he was an electrical engineer, developed a foot pad for animals. And he discovered that he could also photograph the auras of animals. And since I am very much into animal spirituality and animal mysticism, I was very curious about what their chakras, if they have them, look like, and also what their auras look like. Now, the photographs that he sent me, and that I have a partner now who will work with me on this, were fascinating because their auras extend from their bodies very far. There's a feature of the human aura, which is the human energy field, that the wider your aura is, the more effect you have on others, the more healing effect. And when I saw the aura of this happened to be a cat, it was so wide, it was like three times the size of its body. So, and it was pink, which is a healing color. I was totally fascinated because this animal was just emanating with this wonderful healing energy that could be photographed.
Well, you know, Edgar Cayce talks about the aura quite a bit,
mm-hmm.
and how it affects, and how the wider the aura, the more people are often drawn to people because that person does a lot of affecting of people in the world. And how, you know, anger affects the aura and our emotions affect the aura.
Yeah.
So it's really, I can believe animals definitely have their own auric field. Do you believe animals can read your thoughts?
They can what?
Do you believe animals can read humans' thoughts?
Oh, yes, of course. They don't really read our thoughts because there's so much random activity going on in the human mind. Because we change from a right brain person, you know, that could connect with each other telepathically to a left brain person somewhere after the fall of the Tower of Babel, something happened to the human mind, and we were unable to communicate with each other by mind. And so we develop language. And in order to be able to think in language, it's necessary for you to keep rehearsing what you have sort of in your library. It's like if you had a pot of vegetable soup and you keep stirring it, something always has to come up. And that's where creativity comes from, always rehashing things. But to an animal, and if you measure this with an EEG, there's a lot of electrical activity going on in our brains all the time. But when we think of something or we have an intention, our brain becomes very synchronized. And that's what animals pick up. They don't pick up random activity. They pick up our intentions.
So if you wanted to train an animal or work with an animal by helping use not just the formal commands, but to use your brain to really start communing at a subconscious level, you would make them the thought simplistic?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
When people are working with animals to train them, you know, to stay or to, you know, or that's bad. You know, say you don't want them to go out near the road or something.
Oh, yes.
Can you also work with them, not just on the, you know, influx of your voice, but certainly on the thought pattern?
They pick up your thought pattern. They know what you mean. And you can just talk to them in words. They understand everything you're saying. They may not always obey, but they certainly understand it. And if people call me and they tell me that, the dog keeps running out in the street and they're afraid they're going to get run over. Mm-hmm. I explain to them that they're outside, there are many dangers, and they have to be aware of that because they could get killed. They could be, chewed up by a wolf or a coyote, and they have to be very careful, and their mom doesn't want to lose them.
Right.
And they'll listen.
I want to share with the audience, actually, I had a cat about 4 years ago that was given to me, a beautiful blue Persian cat, Mystic. And when I received her, she had been in a home, and the lady was allergic to her, and so she had a little problem. She would use the litter box and then have an accident. And it was very consistent, and my husband was not open to that problem. And Mary Ellen connected us, and you read for me with my beautiful Mystic. And it was so amazing to hear you commune, because I have a sense of her, a big sense of her after a month. I love this cat.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really interesting because when you talk to her and you talk to me, you have this wonderful childlike voice. I loved it. But you could see the characteristic of the cat. I was holding the cat at the time, and you could see her look around, like, where is that coming from?
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody's in my mind. And she did. She stopped the action. And we found, and you found out that the man, where she had lived before, the man didn't care for her, and so she was quite frightened of men. And so she overcame that because of you, and I had her for 4 wonderful years. I lost her last year. It was devastating to me, but it really was wonderful because even though I sometimes hear animals, it's a side effect of my work. It's not something I do consciously in practice. And so it was wonderful to see another. I still think you're clairvoyant, even though you claim it's a learned thing. I do think it's a learned thing, too. But it was so fabulous. And I have to tell you, anyone who is attached to an animal, cat, dog, I don't care, horse, to have the experience of Agnes talking to your animal is so amazing. It's so amazing. And so healing sometimes. Because after I lost my Mystic, I said, Agnes, you have to talk to her. Is she okay? Even though as a spiritual person and as a Mystic, I know that. But when you're in that grief, you can't do it yourself.
No. The pain is too much.
Oh, you can't.
No.
No, it's too much. But you were fabulous, and I just wanted to share a personal experience with our audience. I have to ask this question because, you know, people ask me this all the time, being clairvoyant, because there's so much talk about it. You can't be psychic and clairvoyant and do certain things if you're not a vegetarian. And being an animal communicator, I bet everybody asks you this. And someone out there in the audience I know is thinking it. So are you a vegetarian?
No, Atira.
I'm not either.
I'll tell you why. There's two reasons. First of all, I'm a scientist. And I know that the human race as a species has survived at least 7 ice ages that we know of. And we know this from stratified rock and so on. And the reason we survived is during the ice age, there is no vegetation. So we had to learn how to survive on animal flesh, including fish and whatever game there was at the time, birds. And our DNA has become used to it. And it's one of the reasons that humans can survive, is that we can process not only vegetation but animal flesh.
What
the second reason is that I've talked to cows,
good,
and I've talked to chickens, and I've asked them how they feel about this, that they're going to be used for human consumption. And the cows tell me that they have a wonderful life. Their owner loves them. They knew when they incarnated into that form, they were going to be used for human food, and that they said that they had been with humans in other lifetimes and that they were treated very kindly, and this was their way of paying back. There's only two things that made them sad. First of all, they want to be killed humanely. The second thing is that when they give us their flesh to nourish our bodies, they also give us their love to nourish our souls. And they're very sad that we do not acknowledge that. That's something I guess you don't think about, but that soul, animals have souls the same as we do. And that soul is giving itself out of love to you too. And so now if I say grace, what I always thank the plants and animals that donated their lives to nourish my body and my spirit.
I find that really interesting because a long time ago, my guide Dom and I were talking about this because somebody told me I really had to be a vegetarian. I was trying it. And finally my guide says, you're not a vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
The important thing is that blessing originally was to thank the animals and plants for giving up their vibration to enhance your vibration. And as long as you were thankful about it, and Native Americans have always taught this,
yes,
they bless the animal, they make it a ritual, they really honor the spirit of the animal,
mm-hmm,
and that we should do the things. And so I always give thanks for the food and the soul of the animal or vegetable, because I think everything has a consciousness at some level.
Everything.
And so I agree with you on this, that you know, everything, we're all together. We're all a spark of the divine. We can't,
mm-hmm,
separate ourselves. It's an illusion that we get caught in this separation. And so I know we're going to go to calls in a few minutes, so I want to ask one other big question.
Okay.
Because I just got my Mr. Perfect,
mm-hmm,
and for those of you who haven't heard that story, please go to www.angelscribe.com and read about my Mr. Perfect, Mr. P-U-R-R, that came into my life in December, and it's so ironic. Do you know that he came, I went and looked up in my, because I keep journals,
uh-huh,
that spirit brought him to me because I was mourning my other cat so badly. But do you know he came to me in the same day as my original mystic did?
Oh.
You can't make that happen.
Ask him if he is mystic.
Oh, really?
Yes. Mr. Perfect, can I do it now?
Sure, I'd love that.
Okay.
I thought, how could you write that? You could never make that happen, that he would come on the same day as the cat I lost.
Was Mystic a male or female?
Mystic was female.
Okay, and tell me what color she was.
Mystic was a beautiful blue, she's called a blue Persian gray. She's incredible gray. She had a little mush face, and so sometimes I called her Mush Mush.
Mr. Perfect is Miss Mystic.
Oh, how wonderful.
And she is, he actually wanted to try being a male. And he is what we call a walk-in.
Amazing.
I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
I have heard of it because of this book by Ruth Montgomery.
Yes.
And I was lucky enough to meet her one time and talked a little bit about this. So it's fascinating. I never thought about an animal doing that. I just that I thought, how could that have happened, that she came, that Mary Ellen rescued this cat, Mr. Perfect, from a humane shelter, and he came on the same day, four or five years later. And I was stunned. I thought, how she had to be instrumental if she was on the other side. Somehow she had to get this cat to me to help heal me, or something mystical had to be going on, because it was so amazing.
You know, animals are appointed to you by the universe. And, you know, if they can't complete their mission, they will depart, and then an incoming spirit can take their place. And that's what happened.
Well, it's interesting because Mr. Perfect was in a shelter, and when Mary Ellen rescued him, it was his last day. So what you're telling me is maybe his spirit checked out and my mystic came in.
Oh, this was agreed to before. This, you know, it's really amazing the extent the universe goes to bring love into our lives. And of course, Mary Ellen was there. She was driven to look at the shelter, and if I go into a shelter, I have to close off my ears and mind because they're all
Absolutely.
Going, oh, take me home. I'll make a good pet. Because I can hear them all asking.
Yeah, absolutely.
But she happened to be there. Nothing happens by chance. Everything is orchestrated by the universe, and I am amazed to the extent that they will go to bring love into your life.
Well, it's really ironic because some of the listeners will know because they've heard the newsletter, but for those that don't, Mary Ellen has 5 silver Persians. They're a very exotic breed. You hardly ever, in all the years that she's looked, she's never seen one in a shelter. And she was walking down the shelter and just saw his little fuzzy butt and said, I think that's a silver Persian, and called me and said, should I rescue this cat? And I said, well, I don't think it's mine, but, you know, Spirit says, absolutely, you have to rescue this beautiful little cat. And he's the most loving and purrs like him, you can't believe. Wonderful, wonderful cat.
Yeah.
So let's talk about animals from shelters, because often, you know, they're abused and neglected. This poor baby had, you know, silver Persians have long hair, and he was matted and really had been not treated so well. He's like such a happy camper. I spoil him terribly now. But what about what can be done to help them? How can, because I think they're, you know, like anything, any person that's been abused, you know, it takes time to get over it.
Well, they're very sensitive to separation. Now, there's a variety of reasons they end up in shelters. Part of it is our throwaway society. People adopt a cat or a dog, and they don't realize the amount of commitment that they have to make to keep that animal 20 years. Just the vet bills alone are a consideration. Sometimes people get old and they
have to go to
for one reason or another, they can't keep their animal anymore.
Yeah.
And sometimes, and this is really interesting, I found this out from dogs, people need to adopt dogs, but they hesitate because they hate going through the rigors of potty training them. Cats are self-cleaning, and they're a lot easier to keep, but dogs have to be potty trained to go outside and so on. And so people go to shelters to find animals that the dog has already been trained. And the animal will tell me when I interview it, they'll show me who the previous owner was, and it's sort of like a net. They show me everybody they're connected with. And sometimes it's an abusive person, and I can heal them the same way I do a person in psychotherapy.